Judge Bauer and myself have the unique pleasure and honor of, and privilege to sit with our new sister, the former Justice Diane Sykes of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and now a judge of the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit. The circuit is fortunate to have a judge of her caliber appointed to our circuit, and I know Judge Bauer joins me in welcoming you on this initial panel.
Thank you.
All right. The first case for argument this morning is Lopez versus Michael Center Sales. Mr. Woolley?
May it please the court.
Counsel.
Your Honor, my name is Benjamin Woolley. I represent the appellant Lopez, Armando Lopez. This is an appeal from the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois Eastern Division, granting MicroCenter's motion for summary judgment in employment discrimination matter. Your Honor, the sole issue before this court is whether the District Court erred in finding that non-Hispanic and non-Mexican employees who committed similar infractions were not similarly situated as Lopez. To this end, Your Honor, we pointed out to five employees who during the course of employment and prior to Lopez termination committed the same or similar infraction. Lopez was discharged for allegedly violating a MicroCenter policy, price markdown policy. However, we pointed out to three individuals, non-Mexicans, non-Hispanics, in the name of Anna Velchez, Jeremy Rome, Brian Watson, and Isaac Johnson. These individuals, as well as Lopez, responded were in direct supervision of Greg Tice, the store manager. These individuals, like Lopez, also committed a violation of MicroCenter's markdown policy. Yet neither of these individuals were discharged. Each of those individuals, unlike Lopez, received warning for their infraction. As the court found in Redu, the court clearly indicates that similarly situated employees should not be viewed from identically situated. The district court erred in finding, number one, that Isaac Johnson, for example, who gave a markdown to another former employee for a penny and who was not discharged. The court found that his infraction was somehow distinguishable from Lopez because of the fact that he was furthering the business policy, the business customer relationship of a MicroCenter. Also, in dealing with the other individuals, such as Brian Watson, Jeremy Rome, and Rahul Hernandez, those three individuals conspired to defraud the company. Neither of those individuals were discharged. And all of those individuals were non-Mexicans, with the exception of Rahul, who is a Puerto Rican. The rest of them were also non-Hispanic. Again, Greg Stier, who was at the time the store manager, was the decision maker. He authorized a written warning. And MicroCenter, in their own deposition, 30BC's deposition, admit that those individuals set the precedent for the dealings of markdown policy violations. However, when asked during MicroCenter's 30BC's deposition why those individuals were not discharged, the official answer of MicroCenter is that somehow that those individuals were indeed, and she doesn't know the reason behind their failure to terminate those individuals. Therefore, it's our contention that the only reason that MicroCenter could have discharged Lopez is because of his race. Now, one of the striking similarities that occurred relates to the issue dealing with Anna Velchez, a non-Mexican, and another Mexican employee. In that instance, Your Honor, Hector Zafala, a Mexican, who received the Markdown, the prize Markdown, was discharged. Whereas Anna Velchez, a non-Mexican who gave the Markdown, was not discharged. In Armando Lopez incident, he gave the Markdown to a white employee who was not discharged. Whereas Lopez, who in fact was the giver of the Markdown, was discharged. And based on that, those factors, Your Honor, we submit that Lopez's race, as well as his national origin, were factors in Michael Center's decision to terminate him. After that, we submit to Your Honor that the decision of the district court were in error.
Thank you. Ms. Wine?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jody Rosenwine, and I'm here on behalf of the defendant appellee, Microcenter Sales Corporation. Now, counsel argues as if evidence of his prima facie case is all that Mr. Lopez needs to prevail on this appeal. And that is simply not true. Because not only did the district court find that there was insufficient evidence to create a genuine issue of fact as to whether any similarly situated employees were treated differently or more favorably than Mr. Lopez, the district court also found, after what it described as a painstaking review of the record, that there was no evidence of pretext either. And this court has been clear, and the Supreme Court is clear, that to survive summary judgment, a plaintiff must show both evidence of a prima facie case, and if the employer has articulated a legitimate and non-discriminatory reason for the employment action, the plaintiff must also show that that wasn't the honest reason for the taking the action. Here, there is no evidence of pretext. So while the district court decision was entirely correct that there was also not evidence to create a genuine issue of fact as to whether the similarly situated employees were treated differently, even if the district court had found that Mr. Lopez had presented evidence in support of a prima facie case, the district court still would have granted summary judgment, and this court still should affirm summary judgment because there is no showing of pretext. So while counsel argues that there's only a sole issue between the courts, there really are two issues before the court. First, whether there's sufficient evidence of a prima facie case to allow this case to go to the jury. And second, whether there's any evidence of pretext. I don't think there's any dispute that the reason given by Microcenter for terminating Mr. Lopez's employment was a legitimate and non-discriminatory reason. Violation of the markdown policy is the reason that his employment was terminated. Mr. Lopez himself admits that he knew the policy, that he violated the policy, and that that's the reason he was fired. He admits that he was fired for violating the policy. And a complete failure of proof as to this essential element of his case makes all this other evidence and all these other facts that counsel raises immaterial. But since his focus is on the similarly situated, I do want to address the prima facie case as well, because the district court was correct in finding insufficient evidence that similarly situated individuals outside of Mr. Lopez's protected class were in fact treated more favorably than he was. As the plaintiff argued correctly, there's three different factors that are typically considered as to whether employees are similarly situated. The first is whether the same decision maker made the employment decision in the different cases. The second is whether the employees were subject to the same standards. And the third is whether the misconduct was the same, or at least substantially similar. Now, counsel argues that there was a common decision maker here, that Craig Stiles, who was the manager of the Chicago store, made the decision in each of the cases that are before or in the record. That argument is simply not supported by the evidence that's in the record. The district court correctly found, and this was supported by the documents and the deposition testimony. You know, contemporaneous documents about the investigation and deposition testimony that the decision to terminate Mr. Lopez's employment was made by a home office that's in Columbus, Ohio. Angela Miller and Skip Myers in Microcenter's home office. And the evidence showed that those two individuals were not involved in the other decision. And as this court found in Radu, rarely will other employees be similarly situated when different decision makers are involved. Because different decisions made by different decision makers will not establish a prima facie case of discrimination because different decision makers exercise their discretion differently.
Well, you wouldn't suggest, would you, Ms. Rosenwine, that a company, just because it has more than one person in charge of discharging employees, could shield discriminatory hiring if they had two different people do the firing? I mean, do you always have to have the same representative of the employer make the decision?
Not always.
What if you had co-managers at a large store?
Absolutely. As this court found in Radu, not always do you have to have the same decision makers, mm-hmm. but they're seldom similarly situated if there's different decision makers. And in this case, it really underscores that point. Because in the record, there were 9 different employees who were disciplined at Microcenter for violating its discounting policy. And of these 9 employees, 4 of them were fired, and 5 of them were, they had other forms of discipline, either a written warning or counseling. And different decision makers were involved in these different decisions, and they weren't exactly the same. They exercised their discretion based on what they perceived to be the severity of the situation. But the important thing is there's no pattern of treating minorities more severely than non-minorities. In fact, of the 4 individuals that were fired, 2 of them were white and 2 of them were Hispanic. Of the 5 that were not fired, 2 of them were white, 2 of them were Hispanic, and the 5th one was black. And just so I don't lose track of this, Mr. Stiles himself, who counsel argues was the decision maker in both the Lopez case and the other situation involving the 3 individuals, Hernandez, Rome, and Walston, testified that he was not the decision maker in any of those cases. He testified that in Lopez, that decision was made by home office. And he testified that in the other situation, he wasn't involved. Briefly, Ms. Vilches, who Mr. Noye alleges was similarly situated, was not subject to the same standards, so she could not have been similarly situated. Most importantly, the policy that Mr. Lopez had violated wasn't even in place when the situation relating to Anna Vilches took place. And secondly, she was a cashier, not a sales associate. And as a sales associate, the plaintiff was entrusted by Microcenter with setting prices on discounted items, on clearance merchandise. That's the policy he violated. Ms. Vilches did not have that responsibility, so she was not subject to the same standards. And then the question of whether these other individuals were truly outside of the plaintiff's protected class comes up. As Mr. Noye concedes, both Anna Vilches and Raul Hernandez, which were involved in 2 of the 3 situations that he alleges are similarly situated, are Hispanic. He argues that they're not in Mr. Lopez's protected class because they're not Mexican. But there's absolutely no evidence in the record that they weren't Mexican. As to Anna Vilches, the plaintiff said he didn't know her national origin. The company doesn't know the national origin because they never ask for that. When employees are hired, they fill out forms where they check what race they are, and the company provides that information to the EEOC, but they don't ask where they come from. So the national origin is just not known. There was some testimony about the national origin of Raul Hernandez being from Puerto Rico, But the basis for that testimony was that he looked Puerto Rican to Mr. Lopez. And another individual at the store, you know, testified that he was Puerto Rican, but didn't give any basis or any personal knowledge for that. So to conclude, considering the record as a whole, in the light most favorable to Mr. Lopez, it's clear that he failed both to establish a prima facie case, and even if he had established a prima facie case, he failed to come forward with evidence to rebut the legitimate non-discriminatory reason for the discharge. And as this court has repeatedly held, the only concern is the honesty of the explanation. It's not whether MicroCenter reached the correct decision or it was a reasonable decision. It's just whether that was the honest reason for the discharge. And there's no evidence in this case that it was not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Rosenwin. Ms. Noye?
I would like to point out to several points that my opposing counsel raised. One deals with the issue of whether or not the district judge had in fact gone through each one of the elements as established in the proof pattern established in McDonough by the United States Supreme Court. The fact is that in the district court decision, page 19, the court goes on to say that in sum, Lopez has failed to create a genuine issue of material fact that can keep him in court as to one prong of his prima facie case, that similarly situated non-Hispanics or non-Mexicans were treated more favorably than he was. Thus, our argument is that the district court never went beyond that point, and that's why we have one sole issue here. In response to my opponent's position that Lopez could not have maintained an action either as a Hispanic or Mexican, the fact is that the district court already ruled in his favor on that ground. That is not issue before this court. In his decision, he said Lopez could maintain a claim either as a Hispanic or as a Mexican. That is not disputable. Now, with respect to the four individuals which MicroCenter claims were discharged, when you look at the record, you find out that the two white individuals were discharged after Lopez filed his claim. Those were potentially done to close that track of discriminatory discharge. The only individual that was discharged for the violation of the policy prior to Lopez's claim was a Mexican, and that's Hector Zavala. Now, after Mr. Lopez filed his claim, and it became obvious from their own precedent established in the incident involving Hector Zavala and Anna Velchez, and the subsequent incident involving Jeremy Rome, as well as the Isaac case, it became obvious that there was a pattern of discrimination against Mexican immigrants. Now, they also argue that Mr. Starr was not a person involved in the decision. Now, you look at the record, Exhibit 7, page 122 through 123. Starr admits, yes, I made a decision to discharge Lopez in conjunction with the Home Office. It's only inconceivable to somehow think that a personnel from somewhere in Ohio, that's where their home office is, would come to Chicago to discharge a low-level self-associate. Mr. Starr is the store manager who was the ultimate decision-maker in this case. He was also the ultimate decision-maker in failing to discharge Jeremy Rome, a white individual, Isaac Johnson, a black African-American, as well as Rahul Hernandez. That being said, Your Honor, we submit to Your Honor that the district court erred in failing to find that non-Mexicans and non-Hispanics who were treated less favorably were not similarly situated.
Thank you, Mr. Noye. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed.